morning, everyone. Today is Friday, April 19th, 2024. This time is 9 a.m. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. I have several members that have reached out to me, Commissioner Cerna and Commissioner Lucas, that they would not be able to attend this meeting due to a work conflict and have requested that absences be excused in accordance with the Finance Code 11.103. The commission members will take a vote to either accept or deny this request. All in favor of excusing the absences, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, that absences are excused. Also, Commissioner Cooper is under the weather. He's joining us through the webinar, but Deputy Commissioner Wendy Rodriguez will do a roll call for us this morning.
All right. Phil Holt here. Bob Borkoff?
Present.
Your turn is out. Marty Green?
Here.
Will Lucas is out. Cliff McCauley?
Here.
Sharon McCormick?
Here.
Rosie Morris?
Here.
Vince Puente?
Blessed to be here.
Laura Ward?
Here.
Yeah. At this time, you have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We'll now move on to Finance Commission matters. If there's anyone wishing to address the commission during the time of public comment this morning, you'll need to complete a witness affidavit form and bring it to the front. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items are to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to a rule may be made at the time of rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to the final rule adoptions except under the majority vote of the commission, in which the comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to make a general comment today? Seeing no one. Members, before we take up consent agenda items A1 and B2 in a single vote, I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda item be removed from the consent agenda and be placed on the regular agenda so that it may be discussed and voted on individually. As a reminder, members, please state your name before making or seconding a motion. Do I hear a motion to adopt the consent agenda items A1 and B2 without any discussion?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you. Second.
Marty Green, second.
Thank you very much. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, the motion carries. We will now move on to item number 4, Finance Commission Operations. Commissioner Rodriguez, if you'll please proceed.
Thank you, sir. I have one item of discussion. On April 11th, the Lieutenant Governor released his interim charges. Nothing directly impacting the Finance Commission that we found. A few items of interest, though. There is a item for the artificial intelligence evaluation of the technology and possible regulatory framework. So that's one item. And the other is the impact of Bitcoin on the Texas electric grid. So looking at crypto mining and energy impact. That's my report.
Thank you very much. Any questions, members? Seeing none, we're going to move on to item number 5, the audit committee report. At this time, I'll step down and turn the meeting over to Mr. McCauley.
Great. Thank you. We will now move on to item 5. And Chairman Holt, please give us the Audit Committee report.
Thank you. The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2024 second quarter investment officers' reports.
Coming upon recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion passes.
The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2024 second quarter financial statements.
Coming upon recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion passes. Chairman Holt.
Thank you, sir. We'll move on to item 6 now. The agency strategic plans for 2025 through 29 are due June the 1st of 2024 to state leadership. Excuse me. Finance Commission members, Commissioner Borchoff, Green, and McCormick have agreed to serve on an interim strategic planning committee. As was done in the previous planning cycle, each strategic planning committee member is assigned to Finance Commission agency. The assignment for this cycle is as follows. Commissioner Borchoff for the Texas Department of Banking, Commissioner Green for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, and Commissioner McCormick for the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Thank you, members, for perfectly situated on that subject. Thank you all for doing this. Appreciate it. If you need anything from anybody else, let us know. Moving on to item 7, Commissioner Rodriguez.
Item 7 is the
Midterm. Okay. Do I hear a motion to approve the Finance Commission Agency's fiscal year 2024 midterm accomplishments reports?
Marty Green, so moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you, sir. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, motion carries. Moving on to item eight, the Texas State Banking System report has been provided electronically to you and is also on the Finance Commission website. Does anybody have any questions or thoughts after reviewing the report? I believe you have a hard copy with us today as well. Members, have you had a chance, any questions pop up to you?
Will there be any highlights of the report discussed? I feel like it's...
I don't believe so. Leave it to you to review those and then come back to us if you have any questions. If not, we'll move on to items 9 through 13. Commissioners, in reference to item 10, as the chair, the presiding officer of the Finance Commission of Texas, I have appointed Vice Chairman Cliff McCauley, Commissioner Laura Warren, and myself to an ad hoc committee to review and deliberate the Finance Commission Agency's facility planning and real estate property matters pursuant to Chapter 551072 of the Texas Government Code. This ad hoc committee will be the Facility Planning Committee. Are there any questions or other items needed to be discussed in items 9 through 13? If not, I want to thank you, Commissioner Warren.
My pleasure.
Vice Chairman McCauley, thank you for serving in this capacity. All right, members, we will now move on to the Texas Department of Banking. Commissioner Rodriguez, would you please give us your report?
All right, the Department of Banking's report begins on page 45, and this is the Bank and Trust Division Activities Report. On page 45, you'll see the profiles, pretty steady, that pretty normal activity there. On page 46, one of the items I'd like to point out is the trend of our problem institutions. Since the last report, we've got three more that have been added to the list. So we started at 12 for the last report, we're at 15. There are some pressures being felt by the industry, of course, on corporate governance, on the impact of liquidity pressures with the interest rates, and some risk management practice issues that we're seeing. So the industry is obviously seeing some pressures. On page 47, you will note on the bottom of the compliance examination priorities, and this was also noted in our agency priorities. I'd like just to point out that even on the staffing side, we're seeing a little bit of pressure as well. At the bottom of that table, you'll see the number of days delinquent or past due. We're creeping up on 30 days on some of these already. We have about 54 field examiners that are commissioned, and with the rise in problem banks, that of course means that we're in the institutions a little more often. So we will probably see a continuing pressure in that regard. On page 48, I'd like to point out on special operations and conferences, Commissioner Cooper represented, is a trustee, sorry, on the Southwestern Graduate School of Business for Swigsby. So he was representing us back in February. And then additionally, we have the Director of Cybersecurity and Technology Strategy, Philip Hinkle, who has been representing the agency at several district meetings for the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. And he's been providing presentations on cybersecurity and threats. So that has been his activity. On page 50, you'll find the Corporate Division's Activity Report. Normal activity on the application of the background checks. On page 51, I'd like to point out that our applications are taking another swing, going upward. Last report was 49 at the last meeting. We've got 7 additional filings that have been filed since then. Of special note and interest, under the charters, conversions, and the merger activity, we had one institution that converted, so Third Coast Bank Savings Bank converted to a Texas state charter, adding about $4.4 billion to the state system. We had one merger that was internally in the state system, so one of our banks purchased one of our other banks, so no change in the assets. And as of last week, we have approved another institution, First Financial Bank, which will be adding $13 million to the state system. We do expect continued mergers and conversions. We've got a little bit of activity that's continuing, so more to come on that. On page 52 is the non-depository supervision activities report. Again, normal activity on page 52. The one item on page 53 that I would like to point out is related to staffing on the money service business side. There is a negative impact at this point in time, some of the resignations on the money service business side. We have hired two new money service examiners. Naturally, it'll take time to train those individuals, but we are concerned about moving forward with hiring additional staff members to fill in additional vacancies in the area, given our current assessment rule structure. And
I can say last meeting that we were scheduled to look at adding examiners for the MSB. We're seeing a lot of applicants. We have a 19% increase in applications. You've got short staffing. Where are we on that? I mean, this is a concern. So many of these fintechs popping up that are going to be qualified as MSBs that staying ahead of that for consumer protection. So where are we on that?
Well, right now, we've decided not to move forward. We're concerned with our asset or assessment structure and the stability going forward if we hire those individuals. We do have a role in review currently that we have a proposal. We're waiting for the governor's office to give us the authority to present that to the commission. And that was in the last packet.
So we have to increase the assessment to be able to expand the staff, and that's held up to the governor's office.
That's correct. On page 54 of the same report, I'd like to point out a order that was issued against Sega Corporation, which is an MSB headquartered in California. The department was the lead investigator on a complaint that was received, and working with several other states and through collaboration efforts, Texas and 38 other states and two territories issued a multi-state enforcement action in March. The cohesive collaboration between the states made it possible to respond fairly quickly on this in this particular regard. On page 55.
Can I ask, is this a Bitcoin type operation? This?
No, it is not.
It's not, okay.
On page 55 is the Human Resources Activities Report. This is kind of tying back to the financials that were presented during the Audit Committee. So of all the vacancies that we have, we had 36 reported vacancies at the end of February. So at the top of the report, you'll see all the active postings that we currently have. There are 8 postings for 13 positions that are currently in the recruiting stages. At the bottom of the report, you'll find all the postings that have closed are in some either reviewing or hiring or selection or reposting. Of those are additional 13 FTEs that we are hopeful will be hired. So total within all the postings and the activity happening, we've got 26 positions possibly to hire, leaving us with about 10 vacancies. And we can only train so many, and of course we only have so much budget in some of these areas to be able to fill all of those. So we're working on closing the gap for our vacancies.
Let me ask you this, if these 26, are they experience needed or with college graduation quickly upon us, are any of these being considered for fresh recruits right out of college?
So we've got about 7 fresh recruits that we're looking at. Of those 7, they will be attending our examiner training that'll start in June. That'll be the second class. Total in that class, we'll have approximately 21 new fresh hires, mostly straight out of college. I think we may have one that is a little more experienced that'll be attending to kind of get to know the agency.
Yeah, just by looking at some of these position titles, it's obvious that you need experience in a number of these, but some you could still maybe get by with some fresh recruits.
Right. Yeah, some of these positions do require a little bit more experience, a little more expertise, and those are the tougher ones to find at this time.
Commissioner, do these training take place here in this building? Is it remote? What is it?
No, we don't have the space here to do the training here, so we're having to find space in other locations. Some of it is hotel-based, so we have to get contracts out for hotels. Some of our offices can handle it, but with a bigger class that we've hired, we're going to have to go look for space.
And then something, what you said, I just may have misunderstood. It sounds like they can come to the training, but not necessarily be employed.
No, they must be employed.
Okay, they are employed. Okay.
Anyone that attends a training must be an employee because we're paying for their travel, their expenses.
Okay.
Okay, so on page 57, this again, talking about new hires for us. If we don't have any attrition at this point, what I kind of wanted to point out at the top of page 3, in fiscal year 23, we hired a total of 41 individuals.
This is the top of page 57, no?
I'm sorry, page 57, not page. Page 57. We had hired 41 individuals in fiscal year 23. In 24, currently as of this report, we have hired 24. If we hire the 13 that are coming on, hopefully, we'll be pretty close to what we hired in 23. So we're making some traction on trying to close the gap should we not have any additional attrition. On page 50,
let me just to echo what Mr. McCauley said, the fact that we're having to expand our purview over different types of operations and we're still having difficulty, I think that's something we should be focusing on. And as a commission, you know, we can only do so much. We're waiting on the governor's office, but you know, I think that needs highlighting once again.
I concur.
No, thank you. On page 58, we have the performance measure report. We're within our targets for the second quarter on all the key measures. On page 59, this is the Strategic Support Division activities report. A special highlight here are the recoveries. So between last report and this report, we added $120,000 in recoveries. These are related to two specific cases of two individuals. Both are either an unauthorized or a forged endorsement. So we were able to do the recovery on that. Between pages 60 and 64 is just the breakdown of all the activity in that area. Pretty normal beyond what we've already discussed. At the bottom of 64 are all the activities, the information, and the activity reporting, which they are all within compliance. And on page 65, the one item to note is our commissioning activities. We have currently 13 examiners in line through some phase of the actual testing. We have commissioned for this fiscal year, so we're currently trying to get as many more staff members commissioned as possible to help with increase writing of reports due to the increased number of banks, complexities, and problems. Bottom of 65, you've heard us talk about the training class that we started for the new hires. Moving on to the next phase of their training, we will be hosting an FE2 school, which is a financial examiner 2 school with a little more advanced training at the end of this month. And we've got several people attending that course. Ready? And that concludes my report, and I'd like to call Robert Nichols for the legal update.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members, commissioners. Robert Nichols, I'm the general counsel for the Department of Banking. I'll be on page 68 and 69 of your packets. We mentioned this to you at the last meeting, but we had a hearing held on Bellwood Memorial Park. We didn't get a ruling before the end of March, but we actually did, for your information, get a positive ruling or proposal for decision on that in April. That will also be noted for next for the next meeting, but positive decision on that, so that's a great outcome. We had an order to cease and desist, which for a company out of the Dallas area, just asking them to stop using bank in their name. They sell and potentially finance cars, but we had a hard time serving them for several months. So as you can see, the order was initially issued back in September of 23, and we eventually had to serve them through the Secretary of State. No answer on that back from them. I will touch briefly, since Mr. Chairman, you had a question on Seagate Corporation, and you got that listed here. That was a company that they did money transfers, money orders, and bill payments.
Okay.
We were notified, along with lots of other states, that they were going out of business. And so states got together and put a cease and desist order in place, as well as guidelines to make sure that they do that properly, communicate with all the states, and that way we can protect consumers as much as possible. And then we just had a very simple amendment to an order that we listed to you on the last meeting. This was on the Lewis Funeral Homes. All we did was change an address that we needed to, we found out that address was wrong in the order, and we need to change that. So that was the only amendment there. As far as the gifts that were reported, as is typical, we report these things out of abundance of caution. None of these that are listed are problematic under the ethics rules. That's all I have, pending your questions.
Members, do we have any questions today for Mr. Nichols? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Chairman, that concludes our report.
Thank you, Commissioner. Moving on to the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, Commissioner Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First item up that we want to talk about is sort of the industry status and then some economic highlights that I usually share with you. And so I've just got a couple. I know you've got a whole economic report, so these are hopefully not duplicative, but I did note a couple of items of interest recently. One is a debt balance per capita in Texas, which increased in the fourth quarter of 2023 to almost $57,000, which was up about $1,860 from the prior year. Total debt payments for consumers make up almost 10% of personal disposable income. That's a nationwide number, not Texas specific, but 10% personal disposable income, with nearly 6% of that being consumer debt payments. The rest is mortgage debt payments. But the debt service ratio overall still remains relatively low and not as high as it was like in 2008, 2009. Moving on a little bit to auto finance issues, the number of total auto loan accounts continued to decline in the first quarter. There are now about 108 million auto loan accounts in Q4 2023, which was down a little bit from Q3. The number of auto loans have been on a slight downward trend since 2020, but they seem to have stabilized in this $107 million range currently. Wholesale used vehicle prices continued their downward trend. They decreased by 1.9% from the end of March, even just the first 15 days of April. The mid-month used vehicle index dropped 13.7% lower than the previous month of April 2023. So we continue to see some decline coming down in the used wholesale used vehicle prices. So those are just a few little tidbits.
Commissioner?
That I found interesting. Yes, sir.
On the auto loan declines, yeah. I would suppose, but I'd be curious, do you know if it means also that the number of units being sold is declining?
The units being sold is actually increased.
So people buying cash?
Well, maybe not that much. It's just some people are keeping cars longer. And so we're seeing some of those accounts getting paid off because the length that people are retaining their cars is lengthening. But they're still, the sales were still, but. Okay, moving on to our reports on page 75. Starting off with our consumer protection report related to examinations. Through the first half of the fiscal year, at the end of the second quarter, we have completed 1,321 exams. That's a little below our target production goal. We are confident that we will reach the annual goal. There's just some timing issues and things. You'll note some information in there about some multi-state exams we're waiting on to complete. We've got 27 of those we're waiting to finalize. We've got 28 more multi-state exams in a pipeline. We've winding up a large enterprise exam. And so we've got some quite a bit of activity going on that'll result in some number of examinations. So we should see that number bounce up. We did note that in terms of satisfactory level of compliance, we've got all industry groups above the 85% benchmark. Congratulations to all the industry groups. We want to maintain that compliance rating over the 85% benchmark. So we're pleased to see that. Hope to work with the industry to continue to maintain that. In terms of staffing, we are working on filling a new examiner class of anywhere from 5 to 7 examiners in June of 2024. We did recruiting trips to a number of universities through the spring. We are in the selection phase for 4 of those positions. We've already filled 1 position through an internal transfer, so we're on our way to filling that class and starting a new training class in June. Moving on to page 77, just a little comment on investigations. We see a pretty, while investigations are a little behind last year's pace, we expect that to pick up in the second half. But one noticeable trend is a pretty strong increase in the number of motor vehicle sales finance investigations. Those are up 40% over the prior year. And pawn shop investigations are down 85%. So we're seeing a little shift in the investigation activity.
What's the increase for the auto side?
It's not that, you know, in terms of numbers, it's not that big, but it's just some of the unlicensed activity continues to be an issue. And we still have a number of other complaint. You can see the top three complaints that we see. Some of those issues are some that result in investigations. But unlicensed activity continues to be kind of high in that area. Moving on, the consumer assistance reports are there. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer those. On page 81 is the data on our credit access business. This is a new data visualization. We're doing some internal work on trying to improve our data visualization. So you'll see some new charts coming across, hopefully over the next few meetings. But this is just some highlights from data that we would normally find on the following report. But these are highlights through the end of 2023. We've got some statistics, a dashboard on the volume, on fees, and on refinancing frequencies here. And, you know, it continues to show that, like, the single pay payday product is just now a tiny fraction of the market. The number of payday loans decreased 35% in 2020 and has really remained at that level. It hasn't responded back. You see information on the cap fees expresses a daily rate. And then in terms of the relationship of number of transactions to customers, we see now about 89% of all single pay title transactions are now refinances. So you can see some of that data presented a little bit differently there. If you like the old data, it's presented for you on page 82 in tabular format. Repossessions, the only comment I'd make on repossessions is just the average repossession rate for 2023 was 5.25%, which is down a little bit from 5.6% in 2022. So moving on to licensing on page 83, really the only comment I was going to make on the application processing relates to the number of applications we are processing is in line with our pro rata projections. The department's been working. We've had a little bit of turnover in there, but they're working to reduce. We have reduced a backlog we have. We are at a fairly manageable number of pending transactions. We're really trying to focus on some more efficient and timely processing to get some of the performance targets back in line where we'd like to see them. On page 84 is the licensing dashboard. You'll see some decline in the second quarter. Those are predictable. Those are a few of the categories when they follow the renewal process and the non-renewals. Folks that chose not to renew their license, the attrition drops off. Mostly those are registrations, not really licensing. Typically, we'll see some bounce back up through the rest of the fiscal year, but there is a little bit of consolidation activity happening too as well. On page 85, I just wanted to mention April, in case you didn't know, is Financial Literacy Month. And so we've been, Patricia and our team have been busy with different types of presentations and providing various educational resources. Hopefully you see some different press from different areas about Financial Literacy Month. We're pleased to have done a collaborative webinar with the Department of Banking on the topic of money mindsets. And we continue to try to work together to provide financial education where possible. In terms of the communication, we're working, of course, on our strategic plan. We've conducted our customer service survey and our survey of employee engagement. We have an 88% response rate in our survey of employee engagement and are showing some pretty good trends and improvements in that particular instrument. I did want to mention one item that I think we failed to put in the communication area. There's a report of all the different types of outreach and communications with stakeholders, and I didn't want to leave them out, but on February 24th, we did, Directors Diamond and Lewis both presented at the Texas Association of Pawnbrokers Conference, and so we were pleased to be invited to that and present with that group as well. HR information is on page 86, 87. We're going to be opening, reopening a couple of positions. We filled a couple of positions. We've filled six positions so far this fiscal year. Unfortunately, two of those have not worked out, so we will be reposting those positions in the near future. We're dealing somehow with potentially reposting them. We may still, one of them's perhaps still open, but it just doesn't show on the report. Performance reports are start for you on page 90. The executive summary is there. This is one of the places we report the monies returned to consumers. And so far this fiscal year, we're getting close to $2.5 million have been returned as a result. Restitution to consumers result of agency actions. The performance measures on page 91, we've got a couple of areas that I've already mentioned where we're working on. We're either maybe lagging behind or confident, but we'll get there. Everything else looks like it's in line. And that's really all the operational items I have. I'm happy to answer any questions. And if there are no questions, I'm ready to call on Matt Nance to provide the legal report.
Members, any questions of Commissioner Pettyjohn?
Yes, Commissioner. I just read recently about the CFPB putting out, and I know this is fresh information, it's just a proposal, but wanting to collect 119 data points from auto financers. Have you heard anything about that or know what kind of an effect that's going to have? 119 data points that's, on an application for a car loan?
That's a lot of information. Yeah, we continue to monitor and hear about actions. I'm not as familiar with this particular one. Matt, I don't know if you picked up anything on this as well. I think, you know, the data collection issue is a challenging question. That's a lot of data points. And certainly, I'd like to try to follow up a little bit more on that and get back to you, because that was not one that's kind of run across my radar yet. But
it'll take a while, but it's out there.
That's a big lift.
I know we're in good hands. We've got some of our auto dealer folks in here today with us, Jeff Martin, who used to be with the Texas Independent, is now with the National Independent Auto Dealers Association. So I know he and his team have a pretty good handle on what they're trying to fight up there.
I think we need to be united and push it back.
The CFPB is a unique challenge to us. We all know that.
Well, could you tell me what CFPB is?
I'm sorry.
And that request has been challenged by NADA and several stakeholders.
And for the record, this is Earl Cook with the Texas Independent Auto Dealers Association.
Then I may be familiar with what you're talking about. I maybe didn't understand the question from here, but yeah.
They're asking for a lot of data that I don't know that they really need they're digging.
And to yours, it's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It's a federal watchdog group over that was created under the Dodd-Frank Act.
But given many of the legal challenges that are currently facing the CFPB, especially around their organizational structure, that is impacting, and a lot of these items are sort of been stayed, some of that's going on. So we're trying to keep up because there's a lot of actions to monitor.
I would just comment that in a variety of things I'm involved in, the regulatory agencies in Washington are doing a lot of things by rule that are just interfering with businesses left and right. We're seeing it in the restaurant industry. We're seeing it in several things.
And so
for you guys.
And some of the agencies will do this towards the end of the presidential cycle, trying to get some things on the books before the next election will occur. So this happens every 3 to 4 years.
And usually when there's an incumbent president, there's usually a president pushing somebody to get something that they can ride on.
Yeah. So any other questions for Commissioner Pettyjohn before we go to the legal activities? Seeing that, Mr. Nance, good morning.
Good morning. Matt Nance, General Counsel, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. On the legal report that starts on page 92, I really just wanted to highlight two items, and I'm happy to take any other questions. But one is on page 92. We have one contested case currently pending with the State Office of Administrative Hearings. It's on the denial of a regulated lender license application. So it has set a hearing in that case for June 26th. The other item is on page 94 and has to do with rulemaking for a couple rules that were proposed in the February meeting relating to regulated lender fees and motor vehicle dock fees. Those rules are currently under review by the Office of the Governor's Regulatory Compliance Division. So we anticipate presenting those for adoption to the commission in the next meeting in June. So if there are any other questions about the legal report, happy to answer those. And if not, we can move on to our one rule proposal.
Please move forward.
Okay. So we have one rule proposal to discuss today. This is item C2, and it starts on page 95 of the materials. These rule amendments deal with documentary fees under Chapter 345 of the Texas Finance Code for retail installment transactions to purchase motorcycles, boats, all-terrain vehicles, and certain other vehicles and trailers. So similar to the motor vehicle Chapter 348 documentary fee rules we discussed last time, whereas those apply to automobiles, trucks, RVs, and so forth, these apply to motorcycles, boats, ATVs. So registered creditors under Chapter 345 of the Finance Code can charge a documentary fee or doc fee in retail installment transactions. The doc fee may not exceed a reasonable amount agreed to by the seller and buyer for the documentary services, subject to a reasonable maximum amount set by the Finance Commission. And the rule at 7 Texas Administrative Code Section 86.201 describes the maximum doc fee amounts that are considered reasonable for those Chapter 345 retail installment transactions. These amendments would adjust the maximum doc fee amounts under the rule at 86.201. Currently, the rule distinguishes between what are called covered land vehicles, which are motorcycles, mopeds, all-terrain vehicles, boat trailers, and towable recreational vehicles. That's kind of one group. And the other group is covered watercraft, which are boats and boat motors. The rationale for that distinction, when the Finance Commission first adopted this rule in 2013, it was based on different sets of titling and registration requirements. So the land vehicles, like motorcycles and trailers, are titled and registered based on requirements with the Department of Motor Vehicles, DMV, while watercraft are subject to titling and registration through the Parks and Wildlife Department. So that was kind of the reason for distinguishing those. Under the current rule, the doc fee amounts are $125 for a contract for a land vehicle, $125 for covered watercraft, and $175 for a contract that has both a land vehicle and a watercraft. For example, that would, if you had a contract for a boat and a trailer, that would be an example of a contract that has both.
What are those dollar amounts again?
Currently, it's $125 and $175. These rule amendments would adjust the fee amounts for a land vehicle or watercraft to $200 and would adjust the fee for having both types of vehicles to $250. And that $75 adjustment corresponds to the pending proposal we discussed in February to adjust the reasonable dock fee for motor vehicles. As we discussed in February, that proposal was kind of based on our ongoing review of cost analyses in connection with dock fees. So that's the summary of the rule amendments. As far as the process goes, in March, we sent out a pre-comment draft of the proposed amendments to stakeholders. We held a webinar. We did get some feedback from stakeholders during the webinar and some informal pre-comments that expressed general support for the amendments that we discuss in the preamble. So that's the summary of the proposed amendments in our process, and I understand we have some witnesses wishing to testify, but if there are questions before we get to the witnesses,
I have a question.
Sure.
I'm not sure if I understood this, but did you say they haven't been changed? I know you said those two divisions were in 2013, but is that when these fees were established in 2013, so they haven't been changed since then?
That's correct. The fee amounts were adopted in 2013 and haven't been changed since then.
So, okay, 11 years of inflation.
Any other questions, members, Mr. Nance?
Okay, well, I will step back.
We do have several members wishing to testify. We'll begin with the first. All three witnesses that have signed up are in support of this. The first one will be Anthony Wade Hoke. You'll please step forward. Morning, sir.
Morning. My name is Wade Hoke. I'm president at Fenway Power Sports. We're a motorcycle power sports dealership in San Angelo, Texas. Also serve as the current VP, vice president of the board of directors of the Texas Motorcycles Dealer Association. TMDA is a statewide trade association representing the over 1,000 power sports dealerships in the state of Texas. It represents the dealer community before the Texas legislature and all regulatory agencies as the voice of Texas power sports dealers in public policy and regulatory matters. We strongly support the proposed amendments to Rule 86.201, and we appreciate the commission's attention to this issue. The proposed adjustments to the maximum dock fee amount for motorcycles, dealers, boat dealers, and RV dealers are justified and needed, as costs and expenses have significantly increased since the maximum amount was last set over a decade ago in 2013. We know that the OCCC has reviewed a large amount of data showing the increasing cost experienced by Texas auto dealers, and that the Finance Commission has already published rule amendments to raise the auto dealer dock fee amount. We can confirm that our dealers conduct the same required administrative work to complete transactions as do automobile dealers. Vehicle titling, which sometimes requires in-person visits to the county offices, vehicle registration, submitting taxes, obtaining and mailing license plates, ensuring liens are correctly recorded and released, verifying a trade-in's value and whether it has open recalls, etc. As shown by the data OCCC has reviewed, the cost to conduct this work have substantially increased since 2013, and the current maximum dock fee is no longer sufficient to cover these costs. Costs have increased since 2013 due to general inflation, specific cost increases, and heightened state and federal regulatory requirements. We have seen increased costs across multiple categories, including wages, up over 50% in some labor markets, real property leasing rates, technology, with new specific new hardware, software, and printers that are now mandated, and postage. It is also worthwhile to note that OCCC has already reviewed data showing that the proposed new maximum dock fee will still be lower than the typical motor vehicle dealer documentary fee in other states. The average documentary fee nationwide is $390, and 35 states impose no limits on dealer documentary fees. Again, Texas motorcycle dealers strongly support the proposed rule changes, and we greatly appreciate the commission's attention to this matter. Thank you, and I will be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Members, do we have any questions for our witness today? Thank you, Mr. Hoke. Next up, joining us will be Mr. George Hernandez. Please step forward.
Morning.
Morning, sir.
I'm George Hernandez. I am the Vice President of Retail Operations at Texas Marine. We're a boat dealership that operates three locations around the Houston area, Southeast Texas. We are also part of One Water Marine, which operates 75 boat dealerships across 10 states, across the United States. And so I'm very familiar with the dock fees that are permitted both here in Texas and in the other states we do business in. I'm here also on the behalf of the Boating Trade Association of Texas and the Boating Trade Association of Metropolitan Houston. These associations represent the boat dealers and boat dealer community and recreational boating with the Texas legislature and other state agencies. We second the comments from the Motorcycle Dealers Association, strongly support the proposed amendments, and we appreciate the work of the commission and the OCCC to address the issue as Texas is lag behind other states' permissible boat sale dock fees. Appreciate you guys' time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Members, any questions? Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. Appreciate your time this morning. Next on our witness list is Kenneth Lovell. If you'll please come up here and state the association that you're representing today.
My name is Kenneth Lovell, and I'm representing the Boating Trade Association of Metropolitan Houston. Really don't have much to add, just along with what George has already said. These fees, obviously, are just a little behind the times, and representing the several boat dealers that we have just in Houston, we're definitely in strong support of the Motorcycles Association and our boat dealers and trying to get these dock fees adjusted.
Great.
So,
and I apologize, sir. I see that you wanted to support it, but you weren't wanting to testify.
That's okay.
We put you on the spot. It's good to hear you, though.
No problem.
And our next guest also is also registering only, but not testifying, Mark Morski. He is in support of this proposition today. So
representing
the Texas Recreational Vehicle Association. So that concludes all the public testimony at this time. Mr. Nancy, you have anything in closing?
I'm happy to answer any questions, but if not, we recommend the commission vote to publish these rule amendments for comment.
Members, any questions, comments, thoughts? If not, do I hear a motion to approve the adoption of amendments in 7 TAC Part 5, Chapter 86 concerning retail creditors?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you.
A second.
Ms. McCormick, thank you very much. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I oppose.
Ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Nance, thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner Pettijohn, anything
that
else?
That concludes our report, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you so much. We will now move on to Commissioner Retta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The report from the Savings and Mortgage Lending Department begins on page 101, but 103 is where I will direct my first comments with respect to thrifts. We'll discuss thrifts briefly and the activity there, and then move into mortgage and then operation. On the thrift side, the industry reigns with 21 state savings banks with a little over $350 billion in total assets as of the end of last year, at the end of 2023. Note that one bank, and it was referenced earlier by Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez, that Third Coast Bank, state savings bank, was and is transitioning over to the Department of Banking. So that would be one change when we report next month or next in 2 months. The industry, as summarized here, as you can see in the table, 76% of the banks are being well rated as of December 31st, and with 4 informal and 1 formal supervisory actions in place. My only comment on that is that we're working with every one of those institutions, and progress has been made in all those institutions in addressing what has been identified as issues that needed to be addressed. We now present the metrics that we follow in terms of bank capital and in terms of earnings, market risk, and liquidity risk. We have the information in here, and I won't go through in detail every single one. I will comment on just the liquidity risk, because that is something that we note is in our comments here that is increasing. That's nothing that is peculiar to the state savings bank. That's really a reference to the industry-wide development that occurred, or that was heightened after the events of a year ago, in the first quarter, March specifically, of 2023. That has been a focus in particular of what we have looked at with the banks in terms of their ability to diversify and develop their funding side. And we've made, I think, a lot of progress within the banks in recognizing what it is. There are liquidity risk may be increasing slightly. You have had the ending on March 11th of the Bank Term Funding Program that the Federal Reserve provided last year. Not that many institutions made use of that, but it was another arrow in the quiver, if you want, to in deposit support if it was needed. I would note also that in the case of the State Savings Bank, this slight change in the liquidity risk reflects some of the cyclicality that is related to the agricultural season and also the tax season as well, with a couple of them. If I move into the thrift examination activity, all the, as I said, particularly with the banks that have been identified as having some challenges, all the examinations are taking place with progress being made in all of them and specific steps being laid out for the banks. And then in terms of activity, we continue to receive occasional requests for branches, for example, or for holding company applications that come through. I do note in the last comment on the thrifts that Integrity Bank, State Savings Bank, which is a proposed de novo bank, that application was approved on February 26th, and we anticipate that sometime, it could be in, as soon as May, that bank would come into operation, or May, June, in the next 2 or 3 months is when it will actually start growing, be up and operating. I move now then on page 106 to the Mortgage Regulation Division activities. We present the charts, the tables that show the historical information regarding the numbers of the licenses. I'll draw my comments over to on page 107, the summary there, that under license activity report, where we did process during the second quarter, 2,347 applications, and the disposition of those applications that came in. Most of them, obviously, were approved. There were most of them had to do with mortgage loan originators, as usual, but then branch offices and mortgage entities as well. And while the number of applications has gone down, as you can see on page 108, it is still closely aligned with the historical averages. When I say historical, this is pre-pandemic at those levels that it is working. We did get, as expected, if you look on page 108, at the bottom of the page, we did have a decline. We show 78.9% of the mortgage loan originator license. That was to be expected. And as we reported before, with the slowdown in the mortgage industry, that was something that did occur. I would say that since that time, since February, we've really had license numbers that are trending up slightly. I think we all had the opportunity to read yesterday that mortgage rates have moved up slightly, just over 7% again, with the changes or the lack of changes in interest rate that the Federal Reserve is anticipating, kind of a slowdown in what had been expected in terms of some rate reductions. I think this reflects the numbers that are reflected here and the trend that we saw were really before the last week when you had some of the comments that were there. I don't think anything fundamentally has changed about the mortgage industry, but it is one that follows very closely what's going on and is very sensitive to the interest rates and what the prevailing mortgage interest rate is. In terms of the examinations, if we go to the next page, we have reported in our examinations that there are a number of exams that are running or a number of exams that have not yet been performed. There are a number of reasons for this. One of the primary reasons is that with the SCS, the transition over to the SCS system in performing the examinations, we're still ramping up and are familiar that we've been through an extensive training on that. But I also report that with respect to mortgage examination, if we were fully staffed, we'd be at 14 mortgage examiners who we could deploy and go out there, and 14 would be fully operational, use that phrase, because we still have some who are relatively new to the mortgage examination who are still developing their ability to meet what we consider to be and what Director Peirce, Director of Mortgage Regulation, feels that their volumes of examination should be on an annual basis. If you look at it at this moment in time, because of a recent couple of departures, we have 10 examiners. So obviously, instead of 14 operating with 10, we're running a bit behind in terms of the examinations that are performed. And we report on that on that mortgage examination activity report on page 109. We expect that will take a while to rectify because we have to hire people, we have to train people. And so, and you will see it in some of the output measures here that we are behind in the mortgage examination ratings. But when we, in performing the mortgage examinations ratings, we haven't seen any kind of issues within the industry itself. Most of the mortgage examinations still fall within the satisfactory range in terms of how they rated one, two, or three, as you can see at the bottom of page 109. With respect to outreach and training, it's another issue, or not another issue, but another opportunity we really have in terms of staff development and also being involved in the industry itself. We had several examiners and managers who attended the NMLS annual conference in San Antonio during February. And then we also had mortgage regulation director Peirce was involved with the Conference of State Bank Supervisors Mortgage Working Group and spent several days in Denver working through that. So in terms of outreach and training, we're certainly on top of that. I would make one other comment. It's not in here, but we were approached by CSBS, which is the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, about having two of our senior examiners or senior people. One was Elena Meyer, who is the chief bank supervisor, and then Justin Acola, and asked if they would be available to serve as trainers, as people who would teach training on a nationwide basis. So I think that's a demonstration of the respect that they have for the division and for the people who are working within that division.
Can we recruit some of those folks?
It gives you an opportunity to talk about how the sun is always shining.
Yes.
In Texas, right?
Yeah.
When you're meeting
shadows and lollipops.
I move now to the operations division activities, which begins at the bottom of page 10. And probably the overriding comment that I would make a lot of audit activity, multiple audits that are underway that are taking a lot of time, but are all progressing, I think, like we would want them to. We have the staffing charts on page 111 that show the turnover. As you can see, really nominal turnover in anything in our numbers that we have here. We show the vacancies. I know that both on the part of Thrift Regulation Director Stephanie Trotty and also Director of Mortgage Operations William Purse, that they are very actively involved right now. Spoke with them both this week. Both have a number of candidates that have been identified through some intensive interviewing over the last 2 weeks. So we hope to be able to get some people in place and up and running quite soon. And so we can report on that next time and give you an update on where we are. In terms of outreach and training, we did have the quarterly agency-wide meeting on February 22nd. We have those quarterly. I'll add one other point in here, and this is really just kind of riffing off to the side, but for those of you who don't know, every year the state has a program called Get the Texas, which is really a friendly competition between the different state agencies, and it challenges staff to engage in 150 minutes of activity for 10 weeks. So it's kind of a fun team building program, and I'm pleased to tell you that we placed third, the Savings and Mortgage Lending placed third in the agencies with 51 to 200 employees. So we have a little plaque, if you walk through our, we have a little plaque that shows that we have, that we've been active or that many people have been active. If we go to page 113, these are the output measures I mentioned earlier, and you can see it here, that in terms of the examination reports, that we're only at 31, almost 32%, but I explained why we were behind on that with the SES transition and with the examiner staff being short of where we would like it to be. And then on the next page on consumer complaints, it's almost, it's like the old line from the movie, you know, round up the usual suspects. On this case, of course, the loan servicing side continues to be where we receive the majority of complaints. Complaints themselves are down just a bit, 4.2% year over year. So there hasn't been any trend that is noticeable, nor notable or noticeable in there. And then we give the detail with respect to all of the complaints that have been closed. On the next page, we're looking at 94% of the percentage of complaints that were closed within 90 days. So both in servicing and non-servicing. So there's no particular issue that we have there. So if there's no question with that, then I'll ask General Counsel Ian Berry to provide the legal enforcement activity report.
Good morning, Mr. Berry.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members, we continue on page 115 with really just normal activities. So I have to answer any questions on those. As you contemplate that, we're on page 116 to update you on the litigation matters. First up is the Schoenbauer matter, no activity in that litigation. And then second, of course, is the North matter in Houston. Update there, you have in writing, but since last we spoke, there was our second plea to the jurisdiction. There was a back and forth on when that hearing would take place. It was continued to a different date because Mr. North said he was ill. But finally, on April the 1st, that hearing did take place. The plea to the jurisdiction and motion to dismiss was granted. And so we're pleased with that result. And thank you to the Office of the Attorney General for helping us on that. We will continue to hold our breath. So cross your fingers, cross your toes. The court continues to have jurisdiction over the matter through May the 1st. So that's the date we have circled on our calendars. But hopefully that will fall off the report. But I said that last time, or two times ago. Following that report, you have our table of rulemaking, the note there. We had hoped to bring those. This is our rule review for this fiscal year. We were originally looking at April to bring those rules. We found they needed a little bit more gestation. So those will come in June. So look forward to a longer report next time. And then following our rulemaking, you have the normal gift reporting. And then on the legislative activities, you already heard from DOP on the interim charges, and they did a great job of covering that. So I won't belabor that. And other than that, pending your questions, members.
Members, do we have any questions for Mr. Berry while we have him before us this morning? Seeing none, thank you, sir.
Thank you, members.
That would conclude the report.
I do have one question. Going back to something you said earlier, but our mortgage loans, the interest rates, and you may or may not know this, but what is the general current interest rate on mortgage loan, and what was it in 2019, in the village pre-COVID?
I'd have to go, and Director Purse may be able to tell you, as of yesterday, it was 7.1% was the average that was quoted by Fannie Mae from their survey. And that is up. It was up near that or at that level back in October, then had come down. But then with some of the news, I think over the last couple of weeks with the Fed not moving to reduce to have three rate cuts, maybe not even two, there's a lot of uncertainty as to where we'll go.
Anybody got a guess?
In 2019?
Yeah.
It was in the fours.
Yeah,
it's about 4.25.
So it's been a long time since it's been as high as 7?
Yeah.
I think historically.
Back in 2008 probably was when you saw it this high.
I was trying to think back to my personal mortgage back then. And I think it was around 7, 7.5.
Maybe probably 5.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Any other questions, members? Don't forget, it's financial education
month. Financial literacy month.
All of April. Also, just a quick note, you know, we all come from different regions of the state. I represent the Fannin County area of Northeast Texas, and we have the newest lake that's been brought online. It's just opened up this week for recreational use, Bodark Lake. It's a 26-square-mile lake, and it will be producing $82 million gallons of water per day to the DFW area. So as you finance your boat, bring it up to Fannin County. And,
but they won't be able to afford it with this increase in fee.
They can't.
All right.
Yeah, land prices have tripled and sometimes quadrupled up there on lakefront property. So if there is nothing else to be discussed today, no further business, our next meeting is in June. Please mark that on your calendars. Look forward to seeing everybody. And the time is 10:01, and the meeting is adjourned.